Scorpions Avenue.
Self-help from the hip.
Small doses.
We're talking that shit.
Small doses.
And keeping it real.
Small doses.
With me and Nancy.
It's so funky. It's so funky.
I'm always pleased about my guests. Like, I don't typically have anyone on here that I don't fuck with. Like, Larry Elder is not going to be on my show. but, who, by the way, I saw a video of him walking through some South Central locale with a lot of elders that are still Crips. And all you heard was, "You sorry, motherfucker." And and it was like, "Oh, those are your peers. Young folks don't curse that. That's not the style of cursing they do." But today's guest is a lovely, and I specifically say lovely because that is your disposition. Like, I don't feel like that's my disposition, but you have like a lovely disposition. We have Amber Ruffin here on Small Doses to give us a big dose of the Amber Ruffin show. And I will say, I started watching the Amber Ruffin show in its infancy, like in the very beginning. And then I have seen how you all basically, just like took your weave out. and we're like, "Oh, y'all didn't know. Here we go." And the show is on Peacock. Congratulations on the Emmy nods. Congratulations on getting a studio audience. I think it's actually been a great example of watching. It feels like they were like giving you a shot, but you have taken that and that face.
You're still like, "Huh? Do we still have it?" "Oh, we do? Oh, okay, good." Whew. Terrifying.
I mean, this is not new for Black folks. It's not new for anyone in Hollywood, particularly for Black folks. I feel like it's like, you know, they give you a shot and you got to keep proving and proving and proving. And you all have continued to show and prove. And I feel like, it seems to me like your audience has significantly grown, at least amongst my internet peers. And like, I just feel like the conversation, I'm seeing your clips in so many spaces that are, I mean, like, you're in the spaces of like my peers and colleagues, and then I'll see it on like white progressives, then I'll see it on like HOTEPs, and I'm like, "Oh, she made it to the HOTEPs."
I saw that the other day.
I'm like, "HOTEPs is posted. They ain't never posted me, but they fucking with Amber though. Because the truth is the truth, and she's giving it to you." So big ups on all those things. Today's episode is Side Effects of the Amber Ruffin Show, because tell me this. For those who do not know, how did you enter the space as a comedy writer? Because that to me is what I feel like is the most, shines the most in your show. It's writing.
Oh, thank you. It's not me, huh? The writing?
No, well, you is one of the writers. I mean, they writing for you. They writing because of your voice.
Only I would hear that string of compliments and then be like, "Hey."
You know what though? It says success when you reach a point where people are writing in the style of you.
Dude, I can't believe we got these writers. Like, we started out shooting for the moon, and I was like, these are my little friends who I thought would be great. And I just so happened to catch these motherfuckers in between jobs. And I was like, "Yes." And so we launched really, really well because we had Shantira Jackson and Dwayne Perkins. So they're two of just the best writers of all time. So then we just got in that mode, and then it propelled us. Like, Jenny and I write like robots. I would say, like, I wouldn't call us joyless robots, but here we are after I have said that.
where did your writing career begin?
My writing career began in Amsterdam when I got a theater called Boom Chicago. And I, you know, it was one of those theaters just like Second City where you write the show and you perform the show. So you perform the things that you write. So it is... maybe that's the only writing I've ever done. Like, I almost never write for other people. Like, at the beginning of being on Late Night Seth, I wrote for Seth, But then they were like, no, just do your thing. So then I was only writing for me. But yeah.
But how did that happen? Because that's such a dope, like, transition to make. Like, going, like, people recognizing your uniqueness and being like, oh, just be unique. Do that. Like, how did that happen?
I feel like when I started to really goof around at Late Night Seth, I realized, you know, I just thought, you know, it's hard to write a other show and another voice. You know, you work really hard and you do it and you generate a lot of stuff. But then the second it's like, you can just be funny the way you are already funny. I'm like, well, that I can write a ton of that. Right. I can write a whole weekly show. And you can, it's just infinitely easier. And then it like opens this faucet and you can jet the amount of sketches a person can generate when you're the thing. Like it's great. And it's, I don't want to say it is easy, but that is the word that came out.
No, but it's easier. I mean, well, it's just authentic. It's just, it's your, and in the way that I feel like for some other people, it's not. For some people, they are way better at writing for other people than for themselves, you know, because yes. There's like a certain preciousness that they have with themselves that impedes them in a way that when they're writing for other people, they're just like, oh, like I get this. I can give this away. Was it someone who worked at Seth that, or was it Seth like that identified this, or did you just, or did you come forward and be like, listen, I could do so much more if y'all just let me be me.
Oh no. Of me pitching me for the show. Once I pitched a bit called Amber Says What, close to the beginning, I want to say, maybe 2 years in, something. It's been 7 years now. And I pitched it, and that went so well. And then I just almost only pitched my type of stuff, and no one cared. No one was ever like, look, this is not the Amber Ruffin show. This is Seth Meyers show. So you better know that. No one cared. They're like, yeah, I love it. Here, nice. Get a dinosaur costume and dance around. No one cares. This is the best.
I was going to say, that's Seth not Meyers. Normal. You know that, right?
Absolutely not. Because all of us late night babies, a lot of us are friends. So.
Sip to it. When you're sipping from your own Amber Ruffin show cup, that's also success. I mean, and I will say, so when I did my stand-up, like everyone as a comic, you know, everyone wants to do a stand-up set. Like that's like the thing, to do a late night stand-up set. And people do Jimmy and some people do Colbert, but I did Seth. And I'm like, I feel very fortunate because when I did Seth Meyers, they were like, yeah, say what you want. Every other show, it is to the word, to the syllable. They are like, no, don't say that. Move that. Put that over here. Like they restructure your whole set.
No.
Yes.
No.
They will tell you like, no, that's too controversial. That our audience doesn't like that. You know, you can't say this. They make you run it. My homegirl did, I think she did Fallon, and she had to run her set. I want to say it was something like 8 times in one weekend. And the booker is there watching and like, okay, I think you should reorganize this, et cetera. And ultimately, as a comic, like you take notes, but that just feels very invasive. And I had such a beautiful experience at Seth Meyers because it was literally the opposite, to the point where I was like, hey, are y'all going to give me notes? Huh. And they were
it was also hilarious.
Thank you. And they were like, do you have notes? No, I'll see you tomorrow.
And Seth comes to you and asks you for notes.
And Redwood Jr. was like, he did like a whole thing about it. And I think he was like being interviewed in like Esquire or GQ. And he was talking about how, like, if they would just let comics do what they do, like you would just see so much more of an authentic set of voices, et cetera. So it's not just you. That seems to be the culture over there. And so Amber Ruffin show, how did this happen?
So our executive producer, Mike Shoemaker, said, there is some slot opening up at NBC. I forget what hour, some weird time. And they were like, let's see if we can get them to do the Amber Ruffin show. And I said, oh, okay, great. We wrote up a little thing. We sent it to NBC and they said, no, thanks. And then a year later, they came to us and were like, do you remember when you pitched that show? Well, there's this thing called Peacock. Will you do it on this streaming service? And we were like, yeah, absolutely. So it really worked out. We weren't even thinking about it.
And so you started doing the show. And what? How far has the premise changed, if at all, from your original vision?
Absolutely 0%. We went in there and we're like, let's call it a late night show. We'll know it's a variety show. And then we'll just do whatever we want. And whatever we think is the funniest is what goes. So like, we never were like, we're going to sing songs. Never. I was like, I'm going to try to sing some songs, even though I don't know that I should be doing that. But then sometimes there'll be like two songs in a show. This ain't no musical, but no one cares. It's fine. You know, it's like, we just decided whatever the funniest thing we can do is, we're just going to do that. And because we're the executive producers, nobody has shit to say.
I mean, I'm just so fascinated by this concept of like people letting you do what the fuck you want to do.
Yeah. Like,
I mean, how much of that do you think, how much of that is just like kismet? How much of that is like, you know, the relationships that you've been like walk me through this, because I am just, I love it for you.
It happens only because Seth Meyers did SNL and he was an actor on it and he was a writer on it. And then he did Weekend Update on it. And then he became like the head writer. So then he had seen it all and he saw it when it was him and his buddies and they weren't letting friggin', I don't know, Horatio do whatever he wanted or whatever. And then to see, oh man, if you had just let us be us, that would have been really funny. So then the second his show started, and he was very clear, and it took me years to really get a hold of it, but he was like, do what you want, shoot for the moon all the time. I want exactly what's in your brain, exactly the way it would come out. It's like, oh, okay. But it took a while to even get a hold of that because no one has asked that of me ever. So I had to even figure out what I wanted to do was. And that took quite a while.
But I mean,
yeah, I think it's.
No, go ahead. Because I just, I mean, you see my face. I'm just like, I just, this is a very, it's a Jurassic Park. Like, it's like a fantasy world, you know, because for those listening, not even just as a Black woman, but just like, in these spaces, so often there are these like unspoken rules, and then there are spoken rules, and then there are protocols, and like all these things that you're facing that get in the way of just being creative. And it makes it just really, I feel like, dilutes the dopeness.
Yeah.
But I feel like we have seen you continue to expand. And I know one of the biggest things I feel like that has become a lot, that's become viral, is like you have these Black ass moments on your show where you are just professorial in a way that we don't see anywhere else. And so tell me about that. Like, was that a conscious decision to say, okay, we're going to do these segments? And, you know, how does the research go for them? Because what you do a lot is like blow the smoke off of stuff, the dust off of stuff that people have really forgotten.
Yeah. What happened was Shantira Jackson pitched something and it was like a mild, those things are called, how did we get here? You know, it'll be like, our vote counts or does it? If you talk to Black people, they say, no, let's find out how we got here. You know, like that. And it was something like that. And Shantira wrote just a mild one without a lot of facts in it. And she was like, this is how do we get here? And I was like, ooh, how do we get here is a nice thought. Then, meanwhile, on Twitter, we're looking at Michael Harriet's Twitter page, and he always does these real long threads that are like, you know, the redlining isn't an accident, it's very intentional, and here's how, and it'll just like cite all these, or it'll be like, you know, there used to be a law where you could just take black people off the street if you found them. And here's all the, you know, it's just the nuttiest stuff. So then we were looking at how do we get here? And then we were looking at Twitter, at Michael Harriet's Twitter. And it was, we were like, let's see if we can get him to write one of these things out. We could just be like reading his tweet threads. And we got him and he started writing for us. And he writes all these, so does Erica Buddington. And he, when they have to cite proof, they cite themselves because they are the literal professors doing the work to find out about these like drowned towns and like old laws and stuff. It's nuts. It's nuts.
Michael Harriet went on Twitter and said that my comedy special was not funny and that he thought that I was not deserving of one. So I have a...
What?
So I have...
Why?
I have no idea. He was very not impressed with my comedy. Which is ironic to me because I feel like we have a similar sense of humor. So I don't know if maybe he was more so like, it should have been me. But... So I have a very conflicted, like, I'm just like, he do be saying shit. But I'm like, well, why he had to say that? He could have kept that in the group chat. He didn't have to put that on the Twitters.
People love to have as few friends as possible. Again, the dumbest shit. The fuck are you out there coming after people
I'm for? Just like, damn, like, let a nigga live. Like, because I remember someone sent it to me and I was like, now why you had to send that to me?
Why would someone send that to you?
People send me things because I think they think that they're gonna get to see me like clap back, but really it's just like,
oh yeah,
but they forget, like, no, like it hurts your feelings.
Yeah. I'm also like some lady. You know,
like I'm just over here like in my little office like
well, he's wrong, and I'm right. The special is the shit. How about that?
Oh, thank you, Amber. Amber, I just really, I've been a fan of yours for a while from a distance, like, because we've never gotten to meet in person.
And isn't that ridiculous?
It is. And then there was a whole pandemic, and... And then I live across the nation. So we haven't really had the opportunity. I am going to be in New York.
Come over.
Wait. I'm going to be in New York for the New York Comedy Festival in November.
Yeah.
I'm doing Smart, Funny, and Black at the Apollo in November.
Oh, yay.
So I'm just going to throw it out to you. We will discuss offline, but I'm going to throw it out to you. There you go. That we would love to have you. We only have two people on stage, so it's not like a crazy, crazy scenario. But we have two black experts that compete in games that I have created that test their knowledge of black culture, black history, and the black experience. And it's, you know, improv and music. And just like you're like, it's, you knew you were doing a variety show, but you called it a late night show. It's like, we call it a game show, but it's a variety show. Really? Like, if we're calling it what it is. But you are just the epitome of Smart, Funny, and Black. And when I started Smart, Funny, and Black, I started it as a stand-up showcase in New York because I felt like there was a lot of black comics who didn't fit, like, the bill of what was being called black comedy.
Say that.
And so I would love to just get your thoughts on, like, how we've seen black comedy expand because I feel like you're doing it. Like...
I mean, I don't know, dude. It, like, literally what I think is white people felt bad 2 years ago. And everyone said, no, but look at the way you even think about black people. And then it got through to a lot of white people. And then white people were like, maybe I should expand what I think is good. And then once their mind opened the teeniest bit, they were like, oh, no, black people are much better at everything than we are. I didn't think that's what happened. And they were like, oh, my God, if you just, like, give it a second, these fucking melodies, these jokes, these clothes, like, what were we doing? And I think that's happening a lot. And I think that is what is responsible for that is responsible for the expansion of what a Black person can be that is funny. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because if you are a nerdy Black person and you're Jaleel White, T.S., last weekend I was at my mom and dad's house and I made the mistake of saying, oh, did I do that? And those motherfuckers called me Jaleel White for the rest of the 2 days I was there. Okay, but...
mind you, you know he won't say it. He refuses. He will not say it. And I was like, just whisper it in my ear. Just whisper it in my ear. He won't do it. I mean, at a certain point, now that I won't know, you won't do it. Now I'm just going to ask you to do it. Like, you know, I'm going to try and find somebody that you're attracted to so y'all can have sex. So while you fucking, she can be like, say it. You know, it's like, I just want to hear it. But he won't say it.
Well, my applause to him for setting his boundaries. But I mean, I'm like, I think that what white people think Black people want to see a Black stereotype, and Black people just want to see authentic Black people. They've mistaken the stereotype for authenticity, right. But Black people can tell. You know what I mean? You can't be tricking anybody. So I do think it expanded everything, because not only now are Black people in charge and Black people can be like, oh, Blackness looks like everything, you know, so you can have a super nerd, or, you know, you can have someone who is the exact opposite, and each point of view in between is valid, you know, whereas that wasn't the case.
It really wasn't. Ooh. I mean, I'm a super nerd. I don't present like the quote unquote, I guess, like what we considered a nerd. Like, I don't have like, I do actually have homeroom glasses, but I... I was like, wait, actually. But I feel like just when I was starting stand up in 2013, there was this idea that like if you weren't doing Def Comedy Jam style stand up, that you weren't a Black comic. Yeah. You could be Black, but you weren't doing Black comedy. Yeah. You were doing like alt. You know, you were doing something else. And it was annoying because I would see a lot of like my peers who, and to those who are listening, I feel like the difference was like Def Comedy Jam comedy is like, there's a certain momentum of jokes. Like the jokes need to be like, pop, 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 pop. But I feel like your writing and my writing are similar in that it's very setup heavy. Like it's conceptual, it's set up, take this ride with me. Like I'm going to walk you through its premise. Mm-hmm. You know, like when I'm watching the sketch you had on the show, people whose shit we just didn't want to hear. And the whole sketch is Amber walking through and identifying different people throughout history who were really doing great work that was going to help mankind and it was going to help the world. But people just didn't want to hear their shit. But it's like you have to be patient with that to get the comedy, because you're going to tell us this is the premise, people who shit we don't want to hear. And then we got to listen through everything you're saying to then get to these nuggets of comedy and jokes, et cetera. And the irony and the satire and the wit. And that wasn't necessarily like the vibe for Def Comedy Jam. And my peers, I would see like we wanted to tell those jokes, but about Black things. Yeah. But we didn't want to have to tell them to like white audiences who are looking at you like, I don't understand the wit and satire around bonnets and do-rags. Like, I don't understand it. So, you know, I feel like you are somebody who I noticed was in a position at Seth Meyers where you were doing that like on a platform and on a stage where before you, that hadn't been the case. Ain't no Black women like on these late night shows.
No, there's not. It was when I first got this job, around near when I first got this job, Robin Thede had her show and it was her birthday. So me and Ashley Nicole Black were like, let's just call every Black woman who writes on a late night show and have dinner. And then we did. This is like, we could just call them.
Right.
We called everybody on the phone.
Because there was it was feasible.
Yeah. It was a one number, a group text. So few people.
So what do you want the Amber Ruffin show? Like, do you even have like a mission?
I don't. What I like to say is that we want to just de-gaslight people. Mm. Because when, I gotta say Trump, when Trump was around and he would just say these big, fat, heavy lies out loud, I would lay awake thinking, what if, like, yeah, white people are eating this up, that's fine. What if a black person hears this and is like, yeah, he's right. I am gross. I am bad. The thought of it makes me so mad that I was just like, great. The goal of this show is just going to be to de-gaslight us, because God forbid that someone is running around out there talking about, well, you know what? I don't think you should vote if you don't have an ID. You know, like, what the fuck? If someone's out there like, well, if you went to jail, then I don't think you should be voting. You know, I can't live like this. I have to try to let people know, hey, you are worth something. And what is happening to you is bad. It's bad, and that's fine. It's bad, but you're strong. It's fine. You know, I think that's basically my goal for the show.
It's working.
I hope so.
Are you still enjoying yourself?
The show is very fun. It's still very fun. It's so exciting. I don't know if this is ever going to get old. Also, like, it's once a week. And we have writers. So, like, this is all possible.
Yeah, like, how does the process work for y'all?
We get, on Monday, we read our sketches and everybody turns into sketches, and then we make the show from those sketches that we got. Then on Wednesday we have another pitch, and if one of those pitches is great, then you better hurry up and write it so we can do it on Friday. And then that's how we write the show. So it's very like super duper topical, like almost nothing is
evergreen.
Old. Yeah, I mean, this week we'll have a bit that we filmed 2 weeks ago. And that's probably the oldest thing we've ever done.
And how many episodes do y'all film?
We do one every Friday. This Friday will be the 100th. the 34th episode. You know how it's 134, like season one, episode 34. 34th episode. Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot. I have to tell you something.
Shoot.
Okay, so I was on Doing the Most with Phoebe Robinson, and she was like, oh, we'll do something that you know. Like, she was with Whitney Cummings, and they were horseback riding, because that's something she knows about. And I did gymnastics. And the whole time, I was thinking, this should not be me. This should be you.
I did gymnastics on a show with Cardi B and sprained my 40-year-old ankle.
There's no way on this earth that you're 40.
Yes.
What?
How old are you?
How is that possible? 42.
Well, ma'am,
do you see you?
Black don't cry. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You can try to tag it, but you can't. But I saw you on Instagram. You fucking laid out 1.5. And I was like, well, I'm going to be lucky if I can squeeze a cartwheel out. But yeah. Wow. But you can still do it. How? How can you still flip around?
I'm muscular. I'm like a muscular, like, person. Yeah. I think the proper term is mesomorph. And I think honestly, too, I'm young at heart. And you have the same type of, like, you have like a young auntie, like, it's like you were that's young me. Auntie, but now you're older, but you're still the young auntie. Like, I feel like that's, yeah. like, your whole vibe. And I've now, I feel like I've only just now owned the auntiness of it all. But yeah, I'm young at heart. Like, I still like stuffed animals. And if I see a toy that I think is exceptional, I will purchase it. I'm a connoisseur of candy. Just so you all know, we're going to do an entire episode about candy for Halloween, because not a big Halloween fan, but God damn it, I love candy. I mean, just, and so, yeah, but I think also, like, I've kept it up. Like, over the quarantine, I bought a trampoline at my mom's house and just was like, we're going to be, I mean, my mother was livid, but, you know.
She should be living. She should be proud.
She was like, "You're just trying to regress back to your childhood." I'm like, "And I'm here. I'm stuck here. So, like, I'm surrounded by Spice Girls posters. Let me live." There's like a whole like there's a poster of the cast of Rent pulled from a YM magazine still on my wall. Like, let me live.
You are a nerd.
Oh, to the fullest. I am a nerd to the fullest. Like, I'm literally sitting here with a hand of the king, like, just at the ready. Like, it's, yeah. Like.
Excellent. No, Baby Yoda.
Yes. It's very serious. I take my nerddom very serious.
Sorry, Grogu.
I know. I actually, like, complimented someone's mask the other day. I was like, oh, Baby Yoda. And they were like, Grogu. It's Grogu. Like, they corrected me through the mask. And I was like, touche, touche, touche.
Sorry, you're right.
So tell me about the outfits. Because you have established, and I'm sure you've answered this on numerous interviews, but we're here now. So please tell me about how you established this look.
Dude, I was like, they asked, you know, okay, you're going to have this show. What do you want to look like? And our wardrobe person is Eric Justian, who was, you know, the wardrobe person for all of Seth. So I've known him for 7 years. And he's the wardrobe person for SNL since time began. So he was like, what do you want to wear? And, you know, we know each other enough to where he knows what I would like and wouldn't like. And I said, I want to be as dressy as I can be while being in a suit. Because I figure everything we do has to be like what all these white men do, except better. So I want to look, I want to be wearing a suit, but then the nicest version of a suit that could possibly exist. And then I was like, I also want to wear bow ties because I think they're cute. And he was like, say no more. and then smash cut to today, where it's like the most ornate bow. And a freaking
where does he get really them beautiful made? Jacket.
He just—they are never bespoke. I think they're all just from Nordstrom's down the street. Is that true? Maybe they shop online. I don't know, but I'm
they
the
look
worst
bespoke.
To have to dress. Oh, they make them in house. I'm sorry. They make them in the house. They are bespoke. I'm sorry that I said that they weren't. I don't know anything.
Someone off camera just alerted Amber that actually they are not purchased from Nordstrom's down the street. They are made in house. You literally have them behind you. You have like sketches of them.
Yeah, my little bows.
Behind so you. Cute. I mean, I see a line of dolls. I see the dolls having interchangeable bows. This just seems like it's only a matter of time.
You're pretty smart. You're a good, you got the marketing gene.
You know why I had to learn how to market? I had to learn how to market because I got so tired of people who I knew were not more talented than me getting further. And I learned that it was all hype. And I was like, oh, so people are just good at hype. And
that's true.
And I was like, but I'm good at like actual things. And it was like, that doesn't matter.
No one cares. Can you hype it? Hype it. But you can though. You have excellent marketing.
It's only literally by nature of just getting tired of being broke. It's just like, you could be broke and talented or you could learn this other skill. And, like, really try and get there with it. And I think some people have, like, I think you have just a unique, you have such a unique personality in the landscape of what it is to be a Black woman on TV. And so your marketing speaks for itself. Like, there's, I don't know if there's, if you felt any pressure to change, but it's clear that you have not bothered.
I mean, I did. I mean, I was never going to not be exactly this, but I am well aware that if I just stopped talking about certain things, you know, and made everything severely palatable, that, you know, things might be easier for me. But I just
can't. Do you really think so?
I can't. Yes. 100%. But I think
that. Easier in what way?
I'd be more marketable.
To whom, though? And to what?
To, you know, I could have a show in the morning.
Oh.
I can't say what I say in the morning.
Oh, I learned that the hard way.
Yeah.
Because I was on the reel and was like, I don't know why y'all brought me on this morning ass show with my late night ass concepts.
How was that? How long were you on the reel?
6 months going on 9 years. Like, it just, it was... And I say that because I, you know, we would shoot multiple shows a day. You know, so you, it may seem like time is kind of distorted when you're doing like that type of show because, go ahead.
How many shows a day? Two? Three?
Sometimes three. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we would basically shoot two on Monday, two on Wednesday. No, two on Monday, two on Tuesday, and three on Wednesday.
Wow.
Yeah. And at first you're like, no biggie, but it becomes a grind. And then if you're doing other work, right? Because then on the weekends I would have to travel to do Smart, Funny, and Black or to do stand up or just other stuff. You kind of never, you like never get your legs back under you. And yeah. I mean,
I'm learning that right now. You really do have to, you have to have a minute for yourself, even though that's on every fucking wine glass and get damn t-shirt and shit. It's on every third Facebook post from women my age, but it's so true. But you don't know it until you take your own weekends away by going on tour. That's how you learn it.
You learn it because you have like a nervous breakdown and you're just like, oh.
Yeah.
I didn't see that coming.
Yeah. I thought this was stuff that happened in the movies, but no. It's me and Mariah Carey. I'm having a fucking nervous breakdown.
I mean.
I didn't know. I didn't know you could do that.
I just. You know, this 40 thing is also its own jazz, right? Like, what do you feel like changed about your, if anything, what do you feel like changed about you when you turned 40?
When I turned 40, every time I would be like, oh no, I think I'm sick. I was a little bit of a hypochondriac. I'd be like, oh no, my this is that. Oh, ouch. Now it's real. And like, you know, when I was young, if I could scrounge up enough money to go to the doctor, they'd be like, nothing is wrong with you. You're stupid. I'd be like, okay, see you tomorrow. But now when I go to the doctor and I'm like, something is wrong. They're like, yes. Why haven't you gone to the doctor? What is wrong with you? Like, once I was like, you know, my periods are horrible. What's wrong with me? The lady was like, oh, you're literally filled with fibroids. Fibroids from your fucking lungs to your butt. You're filled with fibroids. I'm like, oh, well, all right. Okay. So now every time I'm in real pain, I still do go, I'll get around to it. I know I don't go to the doctor as often as I can.
Did you do the changing of your diet for the fibroids and all of that jazz?
No. No, what is it? But no, I didn't. But when I had the fibroids thing, I realized I have a slow thyroid. So then I had to go on a low-carb diet, and now I'm on a low-carb diet.
I'm sorry.
And it's not bad.
Okay.
Those first 3 weeks, I was like, oh, this is how I die. And then the second it's done, like, you can eat a sandwich in front of me. And I don't need it. I'm fine.
This is adulting.
I would have fought you for it at the beginning. Right. But now I'm like, yeah, some people have sandwiches. I just don't.
Do you feel like it changed your confidence or your creative space at all?
What?
Crossing over to this 40 thing?
No, because I'm very lucky. Like, I was never, the way I look was never a big part of things. Mm. Like, I was never, like, made up to be the beautiful thing, you know, because everything was on stage and it was all, you know, improv kind of comedy. No one cared how I look. And I just kind of exist in this weird space where it's not like, where it's like Kelly Clarkson or like Whoopi Goldberg. You know what I mean? They're like we're women, but no one's really like, oh yeah, baby. You know, where I get to just wear what I want and say what I want. And it's still like, you know, even though I'm not a supermodel, everything I say is perfectly palatable. I exist in this weird zone that I fucking love. Because no one's being like, you need to lose weight. No one cares. No one cares.
So, the best. What is next? Like, if you could expand, because now you did expand the show to have an audience. If you could expand the show in another way, what would it be?
To have a real amount of writers and like performers. Mm. Like, we are Ian, Jenny, Corinne, Patrick, Namdi, Amber, and then our people who float writing the How Do We Get Here's. But we ain't but six writers. That's it. That's all we have.
I was going to say, is that like a light staff for a late night show?
On Late Night with Seth Meyers, we have 14 writers. So six is not
ideal.
Good amount. Yeah. It's not ideal. But, you know, you don't like, I do like that our writers came up in this environment because when you go to a big show, you ain't getting shit on.
No.
You don't get stuff on the show. It almost never happens. But here, we need you. Every last idea you have, even if I don't like it, give it to me. I'll make it into something that can go. You know, it's really nice. So then you learn more. You learn at a rapid pace. So when people come do our show, they get a lot of stuff on. That's the only way you can learn is to see your stuff succeed or fail. Especially now in front of an audience, they'll tell you like that.
How has leadership been? Like for you, like being in a leadership position.
I'm not great at it. I got to be honest.
What do you think you're not good at?
I'm not good at the part where you have to tell people they're doing a good job. People need a lot of compliments and I wish I would. It never occurs to me to give anyone a compliment because I think who would care if I, you know, it just has never, no one's ever looked to me and been like, did I do a good job? Like, no, that's never happened. So now I'm like, oh, okay, you have to, because, you know, you have a job and you have an ungrateful boss and they don't say shit and they never look at you or acknowledge the hard work you did. So I do need to get in charge of, but, you know, and but six of us, I'm fucking frantic running around. Shit. But Jenny Hagel, you know, our head writer is always, she's like the mom and I'm like the stepdad.
I'm bringing home the bacon. Now I'm going to go watch. I'm about to go watch Jeopardy. Leave me alone.
Please leave me alone.
It's hard. I definitely, management is hard. It's the idea of managing is not just managing the work. You're managing personalities. You're managing people's personal lives. You know, you're managing people's insecurities, all of that along with like, can we get the show written?
It's gross, man. If I had known how much of people's like personal shit. Oh my God, I've never talked to my boss like this. People are wild, dude. People are wild. And that so-and-so doesn't like so-and-so and blah, blah, blah. And we don't have a lot of that on our show. But one whiff of it and I'm like, no, we don't have that here. Walk it off. Go, you go say you're sorry. I don't want to do this. We don't do this. Fucking, if you think I have one goddamn second for your little feelings, I swear to God, I hate it. I hate it. Also, at Late Night Seth, we just don't have it. We don't have that. No one ever is like, or any weird feelings or anything. I mean, or we do and I never see it. But whatever. It was a shock to me. That's I didn't know, like, what all it encompassed. Like, you're in charge of a lot more than you think when you're in charge. People's feelings, I can't believe it. But, you know, also as a black lady, no black lady is running around being like, so-and-so hurt my feelings. Never. Under no circumstances. If someone could cuss me out, and I would be like, great, you and I have to talk. When do you have time? You know? And certainly, I'm not going to get a third person involved in this. It's you and me, bud.
Listen here. You better say that.
We're talking. You're going to wish I had gone through the boss.
I have gotten in so much trouble because that's, in my mind, I'm like, why would we talk to somebody else?
What do they know? They weren't there. You and me, we're talking.
We're going to
the bottom of this today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And ideally, I would like for this to never happen again. You know, I want us to get to an understanding. That understanding is either going to be that we are cool in the gang from this point forward or that we don't need to deal with each other. But whatever the case, this cannot grow into more. And you're so right. Black women never think that way. And we find ourselves oftentimes, I know there's people in their car listening right now like, man, listen, I had to, because HR is a tool that we don't use.
Yes.
And agents.
HR is for the company.
And agents. Like, I didn't know when I moved here. Well, when I got into Hollywood, like, I didn't know that, like, my agent should be having conversations about certain shit, not me.
Ooh.
So I'll be like, I don't like this. And be like, no, your agent was supposed to be the one to say that you don't like that.
That's fair.
Or your publicist. Like, I didn't know it was your public. Like, because I feel like as black women, I never had those tools at my disposal.
Yeah.
That was the other part of it. It's like there's a cultural thing, but there's also just like I'm just out here fending for myself, you know, like.
Don't even start on the cultural aspect of it, because sometimes people are talking and I'm like, whatever language this is, I do not speak. You know how people like will roundabout try to tell you no? Say no. What are you doing? How have we talked for 5 minutes and all you had to say was no? What is this? Like, I don't understand when people are like, well, we have looked at many different ways to do this. And we think we love what you're doing. We love it. But, you know, we also talk. Like, what are you talking about? Just say the thing. How dare you give me a compliment sandwich? I don't need it. I don't do carbs. Keep your sandwich. What's wrong with people? It takes up so much time.
And that whole time that you were saying no, you could have said no and we could have possibly found a yes.
Okay.
Because you could have said no and told me why. Because that's my other thing. Yeah. Don't just say no. Why is the no? Because I may be able to clarify for you that your why is actually not even accurate.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, you're like, oh, I understand now. It's actually a yes. You know?
Yeah.
No, that's that journey isn't ever, that's like an ongoing path for me.
I've made peace with it. I'm like, I'll never be able to do this. Great. I have agents. Maybe they can suss it out. I can't.
Well, that's what I had to learn. I had to get much better at bringing in the folks who are, that's what they're here for. But I didn't know that they were here for that. I mean, I feel like I don't know that with a lot of things. Like my insurance agent, I had to be like, okay, so now what do you do? When do I call you? Because I didn't realize that when I, like, had hit a curb that I needed to call him to call it in. Yep.
Yeah.
But that's the, that's, you right, know, the self-sufficiency.
And that's the problem. Is I don't know you. I can't imagine you could help me. I help me. You know? Like, to invite someone else into this process. Okay. It's just going to take a minute to learn how to do.
Well, I feel like you have learned how to really just create a space for yourself artistically, and it is an inspiration.
Yay!
It really is. It really is, girl, because it can just be, and I'm somebody who's like, I have aggressive self-acceptance at this point. So like, I know what's going on here, but I think for a lot of folks, it can just seem like, damn, like, how am I gonna get what I want being myself? Like, how, like, that seems like just not feasible. And every time I see you up there, just teaching me things. Just teaching me things. All the goddamn time. You be making my masters look like, better go back to school. I don't know. I think you missed some chapters. The drowned black towns.
Can you believe it?
Can you tell me, are there any topics that you've done on that segment? How do we get here? That like that really like blew you away? That shocked you?
I was a teensy bit aware of drowned towns, but I didn't know that it was. I didn't know the amount. Like, that amount is disgusting. The amount. And again, that was one of those times when Erica Buddington wrote that, and she had to cite herself. Because she went there and she went in the town records and she had to search, you know, because no one cares. And people work hard to cover those things up, you know, like.
Well, yeah, if you're going to drown it and then keep talking about it, well, then what was the, you know.
You might as well let it dry.
So, I mean, what we're talking about, folks, is one of the segments that Amber did was about drowned black towns. And I know that, you know, many of us have heard about the Tulsa massacre and, you know, the bombing of the MOVE building in Philly. And so, you know, there's a shared awareness amongst black folks of like, yeah, like they be eradicating our spaces when we create them. But she did an entire segment about drowned black towns. And I did not know that that was a method of eradication that had been deployed. And I know there's like Lake Lanier, in Georgia, Lake Lanier, and people have said that there's like an exponential amount of drownings that happen in this lake, and the wives' tale is that it's haunted. Well, it's over a black town.
Yeah. So when you're jumping into the water, you're jumping onto the roof of a fucking church. You know, so you get stuck down there. You're not supposed to swim on that stuff.
No. And that was the one that blew my whole head. Because to your point, I was like, there, and these are not just in the South.
Yeah.
Like there's drowned black town in Oregon.
Yes. Yeah, people love to act like it ain't up here. They love it. Buddy, it's up here. It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
The script. Before we go, we have a segment on the show called The Script, where we basically give folks supplementary materials that they can take a look at to enjoy and to also enhance their viewing and their listening of this conversation. So,
yeah.
What are some works, whether they be film or TV or books, that you feel are your sense of humor, like that you enjoy, so that they can get more into the Amber Ruffin of things?
Yes. Okay. Well, first and foremost, there's the Amber Ruffin show on Peacock. Peacock is free. Cannot stress that enough. Like, you do not need a credit card number. We don't want that. Keep that in your wallet. Just sign up, and then you have it. Then there's also, I wrote a book with my sister. Oh no, I spilled water. Okay. Well, there's a book covered in water. It's called You'll Never Believe What Happened to Lacey, Crazy Stories About Racism.
Oh my
God. Now
my
sister, has lived in Omaha her whole life and has worked in old folks homes in other capacities her whole life. And the sheer volume of stories, and not even from the old people. These are from her coworkers. we just sat down and wrote down all of the stories about, like, you know, she paid for something with a Black History Month check. And this Black History hero was Harriet Tubman. She handed it the check to the lady, and the girl looks at it and goes, I didn't know you could get your own face on checks. It's just like a whole book full of stories like that. It's like, but, you know, Omaha, Nebraska, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? So that's where we're from. That's where she still, you know, lives. And it's, you know, all these times she's called me to be like, you are not going to believe this shit. And it's great. It's great. It's a whole story, a whole book of stories that make you really, really laugh. But also, you're sad at the sheer volume of the stories. Mm, mm-hmm. But if you're Black, you go, oh, I know that story.
I've been there. I got my version of that one. I got my version of that one.
Wait till you hear what happened to Lacey. That's what it's called, right?
Mm-hmm. You'll never believe what happened to Lacey.
You'll never believe
stories about racism.
The last dose.
I will be purchasing expeditiously. I will be watching. We'll continuing to watch the Amber Ruffin show. Hopefully, we will have you on Smart, Funny, and Black when we're in New York. If not, you are still welcome to attend the show. And you know, I really am. I just love getting to share spaces with other Black voices, Black female women voices in this space. And I just want you to keep doing what you're doing, because it really like helps drive the momentum of like, no, like we have to keep on going. I don't know why I started singing the spiritual there, but we gotta keep on going.
Someone's mom is listening right now going, oh yes, you gotta keep it on. Like, oh, I didn't know it was a real song.
You heard that?
You very badly.
Amber can sing. Did you hear it?
No, yes, I can't. I should never be saying it. It's
keep
very bad.
It on. Yeah.
Yeah, I got to keep it on. I love you so bad. You have built this very cool empire that I adore. I love how you love Black people, like the verb and also the noun. But like, I love your active love of Black comedy and strong women. I love it. And it makes me feel strong and smart. And being around you is fun.
Ditto. And I can't wait to do it in person.
Ooh, I'm going to embarrass you so bad. I can't wait.
I am looking forward to it. Thank you.
Yay.
Star Fans Audio, a podcast network.